Discussions outdoors. if possible. If not possible, then it's not possible. Okay. We're having, what shall we say, a bonus session. I was not planning to have a further seminar, but our dear friend Madhu Muni Prabhu, he's a wonderful organizer. He's so incredibly flexible, and he's ready for changes that come at any moment. And the changes do come, not just at any moment, but at every moment. So he asked me yesterday evening, could I do one more session? And so I thought, well, yes, why not? But I think I want to do something a little different this time. We've essentially talked about the adventures of the Four Kumaras. This morning we heard wonderful further adventures of the Four Kumaras from Tsalina Satchinandan Swami. But I want to continue reflecting on the pastime that we've been discussing about entering Vaikuntha without a visa as a foreigner. And this is in the spirit of, again, Satchinandan Swami's discussion about how to read the Bhagavatam in such a way as to really appreciate and to relish. So we've heard Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, Vandanam. So for further digestion, if you like, this might be in a so connected with both Mananam and Nididhyasanam. Just a little detail before we go into this about these terms. Mananam has it's connected with manas, the mind. So it's something that we do with our minds. We think about things, and of course the whole process of thinking is interesting. How does it work? We find that we use our intelligence. We also use our memory. And one very valuable practice with this process of studying Bhagavatam is to think, okay, I just now read this. What else in the Bhagavatam does this remind me of? What is either similar to what I'm reading, or is perhaps in contrast? Maybe there's a kind of opposite sort of pastime. And an example of this in our context, we're speaking about entering Vaikuntha. It occurred to me a couple of days ago, we might think of a kind of opposite story, if you like, of Ajamila. Ajamila, we know, finds himself, because of his own, let's say, inattention in the matter of his sadhana, after some time at the end of his life, finds himself getting dragged down to hell. So you have the Four Kumaras on the way to Vaikuntha, and you have Ajamila getting dragged down to hell. Of course, what happens with Ajamila? The Yamadutas are dragging him. Who appears? The Vishnudutas. And how many of each are there? Yeah, there's four. Four Kumaras, four Yamadutas, four Vishnudutas. Something about the number four seems to be significant. In any case, the four Vishnudutas, of course, stop the efforts of the Yamadutas to drag Ajamila to hell, and they are quite successful, to the amazement of the Yamadutas, to release Ajamila, who then eventually, not immediately, but eventually, he will indeed go to Vaikuntha, because he has a kind of what sociologists of religion call conversion experience, which he understands. He lost the plot. It's a kind of slang English. To lose the plot means you lose the point. What are you doing? You know, in a good story, you have a plot. You have how things develop in a story. So to lose the plot is to miss the point and start doing something not beneficial, anartha. Anyway, that's a doubt. So my point is there's kind of something you can remember as part of your thinking about the pastime of four Kumaras going to Vaikuntha. You can think, oh yeah, and there's this other account in the sixth canto where something quite different is going on. And then you can start thinking, what is there some point of similarity? Well, one point of similarity in the whole Bhagavatam, it's the easy question. What is the whole Bhagavatam about? Again, as we heard Satchananda Maharaj saying, it's about bhakti. And so, whether there are reversal of roles, role reversals, as he was discussing or not, it's all about illustrations of the power of bhakti and how bhakti is superior to everything else, including liberation, including karma, jnana, yoga, etc. So that's one thing we can do. But I want to do something else, and I don't know if this is going to work. But we'll see. We'll try. It's not something you'll usually hear devotees suggesting that we do as one of the activities of reflecting on the Bhagavatam. Oh, the other detail I wanted to say was nidhi dhyasana. Dhyasa, it's related to dhyana. You know this word? Dhyana. Meditation. Yeah. So the idea is I think the way Satchinandana Swami put it, it's the actual swallowing of the food, so to say. First you put it in the mouth, that's shravanam, then you chew it, that's mananam, and then you swallow it, that's nididhyasana. And then vandanam, he said, is the body absorbs it. Yeah? So without absorbing, you can eat so much if your body can't absorb it. People have this problem. Their digestion doesn't work. The chemicals are not doing what they're supposed to do. In any case, dhyana, what kind of associations in our minds do we have with the idea of dhyana? Anything? What comes to your mind when you think of meditation? We're doing free association now. There's no right or wrong answer here. That's just free association. Maybe for you the idea is something I don't want to do. That's fine.
Concentration.
Connection.
Going within.
Good.
Calmness.
Good. Focus. Yeah. Being here now. Okay. Good.
Discipline.
Okay. Yeah.
Thinking about something or somebody.
Thinking about something or someone. Good. Anything else? Absorption, okay.
Exclusion of the external.
Exclusion of the external, okay. Yeah. Right, so all of these we are connecting somehow or other with the idea of meditation. I think it's an interesting cultural phenomenon. Maybe it hasn't yet come so much to this part of the world, but in Western Europe and America, it's everyone's talking about mindfulness. Mindfulness. This is a term which is borrowed, or it's taken very much from Buddhist traditions, where they have the Eightfold Path, and one element of the Eightfold Path is right mindfulness, they call it. I don't know what the original Pali is, not Sanskrit, but Pali. But in any case, somehow it's now become a very popular idea, such that I've seen very recently, I was one of my, okay, true confession, one of my bad habits. Whenever I go to Oxford, there's one really good bookstore there, and I can't resist to go and see what are the latest books on things like mindfulness or whatever. They had a whole section on mindfulness. Whole section, not one shelf. They had three or four shelves, mindfulness psychology, mindfulness, you know, instant mindfulness, you name it. Mindfulness for your cat. every imaginable. So mindfulness is an interesting idea, which is associated. I just wanted to mention Srila Ramanujacharya's, I don't know if it was a definition, but he gives an idea of what is dhyana with an interesting image, and that is, here we are in the Balkans, we have so much olive oil produced here. So if you take a bottle of olive oil and you pour from the bottle the oil, that stream of oil, it's a very nice, smooth, steady stream. It's not like water which splashes and, you know, may be intermittent. It's a very smooth flow. And so meditation is like that, according to Ramanujacharya, whose 1,000th birthday is, I don't know if it's still being celebrated, or I think so. I think we're still, or in any case, last year. 1,000 years ago, Ramanujacharya had big celebrations in India. Anyway, this is a nice image. Images are part also of our thinking. That's why also Srila Prabhupada very much wanted paintings of his for his books. He actually wanted a painting on every other page. That would make for very expensive books, just the printing of color paintings, very expensive. But that was his idea. Let there be lots and lots of illustration. And a little footnote to that is, one time a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada a very interesting question. There were different paintings of Krishna in the room where they were. I don't remember, was it Prabhupada's room? And each of the paintings were quite different styles. And because they were different styles, this devotee was concerned that Srila Prabhupada, so we have all these different paintings of Krishna. So, we say they are Krishna, but they're different. So which one is more like Krishna? Which one is, you know, really, which one is really, that's Krishna, this is less Krishna. So which one? And Prabhupada, apparently, he looked a bit bewildered. What kind of a question is that? He said, they're all Krishna. And even one time, Prabhupada received a picture of Krishna that had been made by a small child. It was quite, you know, childlike, rather crudely, let me say. crude is a very negative word in English, but childlike. And Prabhupada kept that picture, and he was on a flight from somewhere to somewhere. On the flight, he put the picture in front of himself, and he was chanting japa and looking at Krishna. So, they're all Krishna. The point I was making, though, is with images. We have visual images. We have also audio images. We also have, oracular? No. Olfactory. Thank you, yes. And we talked about that yesterday morning, the four Kumaras breathe the Tulsi mixed with the Kinjapta of the Lord's lotus feet. And of course, olfactory impressions can be extremely powerful, either positive or negative. Some stinky smell, we go, even we don't see it, but it's there and we are repelled. So, and have you ever had the experience that kind of out of nowhere, some aroma comes to you. You're not even sure if it's physically there or if you're just remembering it, but it's an aroma that reminds you of some time years and years ago. Have you ever had that? Isn't that amazing? Suddenly it triggers a memory from so long ago. So anyway, the point is we have all these different kinds of imagery and memory, and all of this can contribute to our relishing of the Bhagavatam. And I say relish, we associate with physical taste, with the tongue. In English, and perhaps also in your languages, when you say someone has good taste, we're saying someone is, has refined culture. Oh, you have very good taste in clothing, or you have very good taste in something else.
Music.
Somebody likes straight edge hard rock music. No. Okay. Different taste. And there's an ancient Latin expression that I never remember, but you can't argue about taste. Taste is just what people have. Can't argue. Non disputandum. De gustos non disputandum. De gusti non disputando. That's it, yeah. But our whole, business about Krishna consciousness is about refining, developing taste. That's called rasa. That's what the whole nectar of devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is about. A person who, in Sanskrit, a person who is considered to have fine, refined taste is called sa-pridaya. Sa means with, and prid means heart. Sa-pridaya, with heart. With, in English, it's actually a French word, connoisseur, a person who can relish something is a connoisseur of that particular whatever it is, food or wine or whatever, is a connoisseur. In Sanskrit, sahridaya. And this is what we're actually trying to cultivate. We understand we can't do this by ourselves. Therefore, the fourth point, vandana, prayer. Prayer means, what is prayer? It's actually opening the heart to the Lord. And it's not saying, oh my dear Lord, I want this, 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 and this. Here's my shopping list. You please fill it out. fill it, but rather opening the heart. Krishna, what do you want? What do you want from me? How can I serve? And as we open, then Krishna reveals. As Krishna reveals, then the nectar flows. And that makes the Bhagavatam relishable. Okay, but I still haven't gotten to what I want to do. Let's get back to the four Kumaras and the two gatekeepers. And what I want to do is ask the question, can we think of different scenarios? We all know what the Bhagavatam has told us has happened. What has happened? The four Kumaras were stopped. The four Kumaras respond by pronouncing what we call a curse, which is referred to as a curse in the Bhagavatam. There is the giant Vijaya, they quickly wake up to their mistake and they beg forgiveness, but they accept. Lord Vishnu comes, and Lord Vishnu gives essentially his blessings for everything that's happened. Right? That's what's happened. Now, my question is, could we imagine, now I'm bringing in a whole different dimension here, imagination. Yep, this gets tricky. Can we imagine another scenario? Well, yes. Anyone want to suggest something else that might have happened? Yes.
The Kumaras accept the repenting of...
The Kumaras accept the repenting of Jayan Vijaya and then retract the curse? Okay, that's a possibility. I might comment just that in the Vedic tradition, you see this again and again, there's this notion that when a curse has been made, or when a vow has been made, or also a blessing, because of the power of words, they take on a kind of independent life of their own. You cannot retract them. It's been done. It's a done deal. Sorry. But what will often happen is they will add something. They will add some footnote, some clause that will make it nice, which is, in a sense, what happened in this case. What else? Anything else? Yes.
It could have happened that the Kumaras give up their desire to see the Lord.
It could have happened that the four Kumaras give up their desire to see the Lord. I see somebody shaking their head. No, they wouldn't do that. What do you think? Not in the Bhagavatam, right? Oh, well, okay, we won't go. Yeah, Vaikuntha, yeah, it's probably a nice place, but anyway, we can go somewhere else.
If the reason was why they couldn't pass the seventh gate, because they're impersonalists, so that might be the reason.
Well, we discussed that
they
could pass six, and then they couldn't pass the seventh because of lacking bhakti.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying maybe
it's
they would have. It's plausible. Okay.
Yeah,
she was saying that, well, maybe they could have given up their desire to enter Vaikuntha because they apparently had not yet achieved bhakti, and therefore... Any other ideas?
They could try again later.
Huh?
They could try again later.
They could try later. Okay, well, we'll wait until some other guards are here. Maybe we can do better with some other guards.
Another gate.
That's actually what... Or another gate, yeah. That's actually what His Holiness Radhanath Swami, if you've read his story going home, when he finally gets to the border of India, and they won't let him in because it doesn't have enough money. You read that? And so he goes some distance away and he waits until there's a change of guard. And then he tries again and it works. He manages to make friends with the guard. Okay, go ahead. Yeah, that could have happened. That we could do that. Deva.
Same.
Other gate. Okay, yes.
Really. When Lord Vishnu appears, he sort of reprimands the poor Kumaras for uttering the curse so easily upon his servants.
Okay, Vishnu could have scolded, reprimanded, or said, you know, this is not good, you're so quickly cursing like this. What about this? How about this reaction of the four Kumaras? Can we think of alternative reactions that they would have had in relation to these two, Jaya and Vijaya? Yes.
Because of good association, they will become perfect and begin kirtan and go into Vaikuntha.
Because of good association, they could have started doing kirtan and then go into Vaikuntha. Yeah, okay, maybe.
They could preach to Jaya and Vijaya.
They could preach to Jaya and Vijaya. What would they preach?
Mindfulness.
Yes. What would they preach? You want to say? Krishna. Yeah.
Yes. They would preach. They would support their cause by preaching.
They would support.
Yeah.
Whose cause?
Their own cause.
Yeah.
Why they should go to
You life. Should let us in because...
Yes, because. Mm. Okay. Don't see exactly what is going wrong.
What would be the clincher reason for them to give why they should let them in?
We've never
been inside. Let us see at least once. I don't know if that's very convincing. When I was having this trouble at the border of Great Britain, you know, well, I've never been, and I just want to see once. Let me. Yes,
Mojo. They could have asked the Jaya Vijaya, what is their criteria?
Ah. What's the criteria? How do we get ourselves qualified so that we can go in? Probably they would have said, first thing is, put on some clothes. It could also, I mean, we're just having some fun imagining what other scenarios might be. It could be that that Jaya and Vijaya and other guards in general have had experience in the past of naked sages coming, and they know that, you know, it doesn't really fit with the dress code for Vaikuntha, but they don't want to turn away sages because they know that sometimes they may get upset and they curse. So what they do is they keep a cabinet where they keep some clothes. You're welcome in, but just we are going to have to clothe you in dhoti and kurta. Just, you know, come with me and we'll. And I'm saying this, you know, it sounds kind of silly, but there's one temple in Kerala, the Padmanabh temple, in Trivandrum, I think it is, where they have a dressing room for, and they have a very strict rule there that men can only come into the temple wearing a dhoti. So they supply dhoti if someone comes without a dhoti. I don't know, they pay a few rupees or something to rent and then they put on a dhoti. So that could have been possible as well. Any other ideas about this? What alternative actions? Yes. Oh, the four Kumaras might have glorified these Kshatriyas for their Kshatriya character. Is that it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's possible. That's an idea. Yes.
They can tolerate the whole situation on the way to the Lord comes.
Okay, they could just be tolerant. Titikshava karunika, right? Sages, sadhus are tolerant, patient. There are many stories, again in Buddhist tradition, of potential students for some Buddhist guru. They will come to the ashram and the monks won't let him inside, so he will sit outside in the freezing cold for days and weeks and months and years until he's finally admitted and so, okay, he must be serious. Let him in. This is one Chinese famous Buddhist monk. Famous Buddhist. Yes,
they can ask to speak with the supervisor. Like when you want to enter somewhere and they don't want to allow you, please let me speak to your supervisor.
Okay.
Let me speak with Lord Vishnu.
Yeah. Yes, can we please speak with you? Or, yes, in that spirit, just to say, could you just announce that we are here and let the supervisor decide? Now, I was thinking about this also and just reflecting that there are four Kumaras. And in the Bhagavatam, they're kind of all bunched together. They all kind of seem to do the same thing and they seem to be saying the same, or yeah, they all say the same thing. They seem to be thinking all the same thing. Maybe it's just the Western individualist mind, but I couldn't help but thinking there's four Kumaras. Wouldn't they have different opinions, different perspectives on the whole thing? And could it be the case that as they're approaching the seventh gate of Vaikuntha, they're discussing with each other about what they're doing, about their present and past and present and anticipated experience. And they might have quite different opinions among themselves. And that could be an interesting discussion that we just don't know about. Could it be also that they discussed among themselves before cursing the gatekeepers just what would be the best for them? In fact, that's suggested. It doesn't say they discussed, but it says, as I remember in one verse, they considered what would be best for them, and then they their conclusion. Shishi Jagannath Sivanja Bhagavadeva Jagannath. Anyway, what I'm leading into, you're maybe wondering where am I going with this? Well, here's where I'm going. I'm suggesting Well, there's a broader point and there's a more specific point. The more specific point is that, as some of you know, we have this book series which now has three different books. We call them Krishna Smarana. And what we're doing with these is encouraging devotees to write about Krishna's pastimes, and we are we're publishing these, and we've had very good response from devotees, very positive from senior devotees, saying these are really very helpful to for this process, but also for use. Some devotees are using, they're taking some of these writings, adapting them for presentation, for example, in Sunday feast program, performing little dramas, and skits, and things like that. And this is an ongoing project, but it's kind of slowed down in the last couple of years, mainly for technical and practical reasons, because our main editor's health has not been so good. But we want to keep it going, and we want to encourage you who may be thinking, oh, that's nice, but I'm not a writer, to do some writing. And this is encouraged, this is bona fide, this is encouraged by Srila Prabhupada. He says, write according to your realization as a process of purification. Krishnarangini Mataji has written a few things for these books, right? And some others of you have written. And so I'm making a little advertisement now. We've been a little bit stuck on our next issue, the subject of which is Krishna and his opponents. The very first one we did was simply Krishna Smarana, and we were focusing on Krishna's pastimes after Vrindavan. Then we did Rama Smarana, about based on Rama Leela from Ramayana. And then we had Gaura Smarana. Now we're sort of going back over and back to Krishna. And now we're being a little more specific. Krishna and his opponents. We didn't say Krishna and the demons, because there are some opponents of Krishna who are not demons, but at some point they become opponents. Like Lord Brahma when he steals the cow. He's like a kind of opponent. Indra when he sends the storm. So these are opponents. So we want to invite you to consider doing this as a practice for your own meditation on Krishna Lila. One of the ancient authors of the Latin world of Rome, Cicero, once said that there is no better way to focus the mind and to engage the mind and the subject you want to think about by writing. And you may experience this, those of you who do some writing. This is a wonderful way to sharpen the mind, to focus the mind, because you have to think what words to use. Writing is actually a kind of public activity. It's a communication over time. It's a little bit mystical. You can write something and somebody 1,000 years from now could read it. Imagine that. Now, I just said something that's probably I shouldn't have said, because this will scare you. Oh, I can't write something that someone will read 1,000 years from now, because then they will say, who was this crazy person writing this? But no. Even if you're writing only for yourself, you're still writing and you're still putting it on paper or putting it on a computer, and it's putting it out there in the world. And as soon as you do that, you actually don't have control over it. You don't have full control. And that's nice. And writing, we hear a lot about reading, and we're hearing how important it is to read consciously, conscientiously, with attention, with devotion. And it begins with shravanam. There are 9 processes of devotional service. First shravanam, and what's the next? Kirtanam. Kirtanam. One form of kirtanam, and it was a form which Srila Prabhupada made what he considered as most important, was writing. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, either I'm not a writer, so I don't write. I'm not a writer. People who write, they are writers. I am not a writer. Like some people say, you know, I'm not a singer, okay? Don't ask me to sing in kirtan. I'm not a singer. But we say, no, just sing. Even you're not a singer, sing. Right? And then we try it and we find, yeah, actually, it's nice. You may be saying that, or you might be saying, hey, come on. I'm just barely getting my 16 rounds done. What to speak of reading something? And now you want me to write something. I don't have time. I hardly have time for what I absolutely have to do, and you're saying I should write? Forget it. To this I will say a famous English saying, which Prabhupada sometimes would quote, where there is a will, there's a way. How do you say it in Serbian? Ima inači. Yeah. So you have the same thing. So, anyway, this is my humble suggestion. This is a much bigger topic than I think I should begin to end. Maybe there's some question we can talk. But one more advertisement, and that is we have this Krishna and his opponents, and we have a new project. They're sort of overlapping. Krishna and his cows. Krishna and his cows. What could I write about Krishna and his cows? That's something to think about. Okay. Yes, Hridoy.
Could you perhaps a little clarify the difference? Could you perhaps? Could you perhaps clarify a little bit the difference between the process of mananam and dhyanam?
Nididhyasana.
When you explain it, there is a sense, I mean, it's different. It is different, but how would you say it's different?
Well, let's start with how they're the same. It's like with the analogy of eating, right? It's all to do with food. And it's all to do with getting it into the body to transform it into energy and so on for the body. And so to overemphasize differences may be counterproductive. We can say, at least minimally, we can say that mananam would be the preliminary stage of nididhyasana. But I think here the essential idea of mananam is the emphasis on the mind, whereas nididhyasana is more like let it reach the heart, let it impact, allowing whatever it is to really impact us, such that there is As again, Maharaj was explaining, there's a change of behavior. We do something as a result.
So it's a form of like mobilizing emotion and memory and going deeper than just a rational intellectual reflection.
But it can also include rational reflection. It can include questioning and doubting and how does this make sense, first of all? Is this what I'm reading? Do I understand this right? Or what? So it can be that as well. In fact, I would say that's the beginning point, you know. Am I getting it? Am I getting the words? Am I getting the meaning? The basic meaning. It can also be, and I think I like to encourage devotees, pay attention also in reading the Bhagavatam to those word-for-word translations. There's a lot of interesting things there. I mentioned yesterday how Prabhupada translates the word sankshobham as agitation for change. Wow! That's so interesting, isn't it? But you won't find agitation for change, quite exactly that, in his translation of the verse. Because the way language works, you have to decide how to make the sentences, you know, flow and so on. But those word for word, and try to pay attention to those Sanskrit words as well. Gradually, you'll actually be learning Sanskrit. Then you can start learning some Sanskrit grammar, and then before you know it, it's not so difficult. You can appreciate more about the poetry and so on. It goes on and on. But the point I wanted to make is, Prabhupada once, or more than once, said, discuss the Bhagavatam from all angles of vision. And one thing he's saying here is that the acharyas, in their commentaries, often they will give an explanation of something, and then they will say nanu, and then they'll say something else. And that nanu is a signal that, well, there's another way to look at this. There's another way to translate this. So that's all part of manana, I would say. Yes.
Me? Okay, I did. So you spoke about the four kumaras, and I remember the Bhajana Radhika Stava, where it is mentioned that the Sanaka and Sanatana, at least, were describing the character of Radharani. Are they the same four kumaras we are speaking about?
Sanaka, Sanatana,
Paranitacharite.
Yes, Sanaka, Sanatana, Paranitacharite, Radhe, Jaya, Jaya, Mara. Why not? Two of the four kumaras.
And can we know what they spoke about?
Oh, if we could, it would be wonderful, wouldn't it? And maybe it's possible, but I can't tell you, as I have not come across this, at least thus far. But the fact that, and Rupa Goswami, that's a song from Rupa Goswami, just his saying that Sanaka and Sanatana have described the glories of Radharani is it's a kind of signal that Radharani is really glorious, because if the Kumaras are glorifying Radharani, you know, that's really something, right? So that's kind of that's the general point. Yes, Hara Gatti.
I would ask, it is true that Arjuna was once Krishna's opponent?
Is it true that Arjuna,
Arjuna, yes,
was once Krishna's opponent? Does anybody know a specific pastime of Arjuna fighting with Krishna?
He said, I don't fight.
Huh?
He said that he won't fight. He doesn't want to fight.
He doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want to fight with Krishna.
He fight against the in the Kurukshetra war. He didn't want to follow Krishna.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That sort of opposition, you can say, was there. There may be something, but there's so much. I mean, in the Mahabharata, there's so many pastimes. I'm not much of a Mahabharata vidvan, so I won't say that no, there's never been a time. They are identified as Nara Narayana Rishi, sometimes Nara Narayana Rishis, plural, and sometimes Nara Narayana Rishi, singular, like two in one. So they're kind of Achintya Veda Veda, different and non-different. There is a pastime of Nara Narayana in 12th canto that Indra wants them, because they're meditating, he wants them to fall down from their meditation. The usual story, he sends apsaras. Nara and Narayan are very amused at this, and Narayana, he takes a mango, and he takes the juice from the mango, and he draws an image on his thigh. The Sanskrit word for thigh is uru. And this this image is of a woman. And the image is so beautiful. She comes alive from his thigh. And when the apsarasas see this image, they immediately surrender. They're embarrassed. And this image becomes Urvasi. Uru Vasi. She who resides, Vasin, in the Uru of Narayana. That's the story. How did we get there? Oh, Arjuna. So Nara Narayana. Yeah. Right. Okay. Let me ask, let me put you on the spot. I've put my little promotion here. Who of you feel now you would like to give a try to write something for our little project, Krishna and his opponents? I'm getting tired. One, two, three, four, five. No others. Six. Only men and Krishna Rangini? No other ladies? You don't have to write in English. You can write in Serbian, Croatian, Swiss, German, or whatever. And for publishing, we'll find someone, if you cannot find someone, to translate. Okay, not to put you on the spot, but please write something. Do it within the next month, if possible, and send it to Rasodari Hari. Okay? Yes, you can do that? Not so sure. If you want to write something and you're not so sure if you're on the right track, you can mention that. And we can maybe give you some suggestions how to improve. Okay? Would you like that? If I offer this, some coaching in your writing, any of you ladies, would you be more inclined to try it? Mm-hmm. All right. I'll have to think of another way to go about this. Huh? Yeah, if Satchinandan Swami says, please do this, then you all go, oh, yes. Okay.
This is for Krishna and his opponents or for Krishna and himself?
Either one or both.
Either one or both.
Yes. 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 If you want to get some idea of how we're doing this, have a look. I think there are some copies. I'm not sure. I think I saw Gaura Smarana at the table out here. You can read some samples. And in the introduction to that particular book, I give some detailed directions how to do it. I also gave a maximum length of 1,200 words, which is like three pages or so. It can be less, of course. Anyway, you think about it. You're not committing yourself, but maybe Lord Jagannath today in Rath Yatra will reveal himself to you and say, Mataji, you should write something for this. Yeah? Could happen. Watch out. Lord Jagannath does surprising things. Yeah? No? So, today is Jagannath Rath Yatra. Let us also, during the Rath Yatra, remember Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Rath Yatra. What was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doing in Rath Yatra, in Jagannath Puri? Dancing and singing, indeed. Did he dance and sing only in one form? He expanded himself into seven forms. Did everyone see that there were seven forms of Lord Chaitanya? No, not everyone. But those who were allowed to see, they could see. Imagine Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing in seven forms. Imagine dancing in one form. Wouldn't that be nice to see? And imagine that he was spinning around like a firebrand. What is firebrand? Yeah, whatever. And imagine that tears were squirting out of his eyes. That's hard to imagine, isn't it? But Krishnadas Kaviraj says that's what was happening. Imagine his limbs stretching out, that his arms were coming out of their sockets. You'd want to call an ambulance, wouldn't you? And then they were shrinking into his body, Kurma Rupa. Imagine, it's beyond our imagination. The whole earth was tipping back and forth as Lord Chaitanya was dancing, and Nityananda and all the associates. So as we're on kirtan, we should actually feel, let us remember Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If we remember Lord Chaitanya's dancing and singing in kirtan with Lord Jagannath, Lord Chaitanya may also come. Lord Jagannath is present, yes? So why should not Lord Chaitanya also be present? Then it will be very nice. And then all the people around will feel, oh, there's something special happening here. Let me find out something more about these people. Maybe they're not so crazy after all. Shishi Gornitai ki, Shishi Jagannath Subhantra Maladeva ki, Shri Jagannath Rath Yatra Novisat ki, Gaur Prema. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much for your kind participation and all the best.